is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello everybody, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and today I'm at the UCCE office in Calaveras, which is located in San Andreas, and I am talking to our advisor, whose name is Katie Johnson. Hello, Katie.
Hi, thanks for having me, Debbie.
Welcome to the show, and we're very excited to have you with the university program. And I understand you actually have, well, actually, we probably should mention what a nutrition advisor does, and actually what some of those functions are.
Sure. So my full title is Nutrition, Family, and Consumer Sciences Advisor. And under that, I oversee the CalFresh program, which provides nutrition education and strategies to help people access healthy foods in our foothill counties. And I also will be helping with the Master Food Preservers program, which I'm very excited to look for ways we can integrate those two things.
That is wonderful. Now, formerly, the CalFresh program was called something else. It was at SNAP-Ed or something like that?
Sure. The CalFresh program, it's a little complicated in California.
It's a little complicated.
So when we say CalFresh in California, if you receive CalFresh benefits, that is what's known as SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, a.k.a. food stamps.
Okay.
Officially, it's not called food stamps anymore. It's called SNAP. But so people receive CalFresh benefits. Then, additionally, from the federal dollars that pay for that, they also fund education in the communities that are receiving these benefits. So we provide CalFresh nutrition education along with the SNAP benefits. So we are what's called SNAP-Ed.
That is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I understand you're going to be covering the four counties of the Central Sierra,
mm-hmm.
which includes El Dorado County, Amador County, Calaveras, mm-hmm. and Tuolumne counties. That's a huge chunk.
It is. It's a wide range. And I'm excited to get out to all the far-flung offices. I have not quite made it to South Lake Tahoe yet.
I didn't even mention South Lake Tahoe.
Uh-huh, this is my third week. Yes, and our range, it goes from Jamestown all the way to South Lake Tahoe. So it's quite a range.
Mm-hmm. Now, what led you into nutrition? I mean, because that is your background. Maybe you can tell mm-hmm. us a little bit about that.
Sure. I got into nutrition because I love food. There was no one catalyst that got me there, but I have always loved sharing food with people. In high school, I was the one bringing in baked goods for all my friends to try, and I have always loved to cook. I started cooking at a young age, and that really just led me eventually into growing food. Still live on my family farm in Sonora, which my husband maintains. It's Red Earth Farm. And, we produce fruits and vegetables. I don't do a whole lot of handwork on the farm these days because I'm busy otherwise. But
well, the Tuolumne Master Gardeners, they actually toured your farm a while back and were very impressed.
Uh-huh. Well, we were happy to have them. It was a lovely evening.
It was really a lot of fun. How do you sell those fruits and vegetables from your farm? Are those...
Mm-hmm. Lately, we sell at the Sonora Farmers Market. Predominantly the Sonora Farmers Market.
Mm-hmm.
When it's in season. When it's out of season, we usually run a very small CSA. We're not right at the moment. Occasionally, we've sold at other small area markets.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, I helped run the Tuolumne Farmers Market,
which has since
it's no longer a certified farmers market. But yeah, some other small markets. We've sold to a couple mm-hmm. small grocers, restaurants, things like that. But our major outlet is the Sonora Farmers Market.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Now, what prepared you? What's in your background for this job? I understand you were at A different university?
I was. So after farming for a while, moving back to Sonora with my husband and starting our farm, I just really wanted to work with more people, reach more people than I felt I was able to working on the farm. And went back to get my master's in public health at UC Berkeley with a concentration in nutrition. They have a great program there. So I got connected with UC Berkeley that way, and then worked for a while on both on staff and as a contractor at UC Merced. And I worked on a large public health grant that was in Merced County at the time, doing communications work and doing a little bit of research, helping run a research lab where we looked at people's perceptions of health in their neighborhoods and places.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And really looking towards what we call in public health the social determinants of health, which is, it's a little bit more how, you know, we can tell people to eat healthy food all day long, but if they can't access that healthy food, you know, we know that their neighborhood is just as likely as their knowledge to influence whether or not they actually end up eating that healthy food.
Well,
so we look at things like places, your neighborhood structure, you know, the things that go into the choices we make other than just our own individual agency, but our environment, really.
So our environment is a huge influence on what we eat.
You've heard you can predict someone's lifespan quite accurately based on their zip code, actually.
I have to admit, I did not hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, previously, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it. How about our zip codes up here? I mean, have you done any research there?
You know, we have a range across our four counties.
Okay.
So it depends place to place. But
okay.
I think we're doing pretty well for our size and the resources we have. I think people have a lot of access to the outdoors here, which is a plus. Of course, we have a lot of issues with transportation. We have no public transportation and access to a lot of amenities that would be in a city we don't have. So it's mixed. But
no. How interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about some of your other projects that you've worked on in the past, what are those? That was a very interesting one.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So that was, like I said, at UC Merced. I was working with some of the undergraduate students there for a wonderful researcher who was helping with this very large countywide grant. And it was looking at food, nutrition, and also at physical activity, which often goes with nutrition. They kind of go hand in hand.
Sure.
And then also tobacco use, and what's called community clinical linkages, which is kind of a wonky term for just really access to healthcare, basically, and whether or not people were following through with healthcare and could access it well. So a piece with that side of things, at community clinical linkages with that project, pieces of it related to helping women to breastfeed and creating systems and policies that can help women keep breastfeeding. We know that breastfeeding is one of the best things, not only for an infant's health and not only for the infant's immediate health, but for the infant's lifelong health and actually for the mother's health as well. Breastfeeding is preventative for many types of cancers.
Really?
Mm-hmm. In the mother.
I wasn't aware.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of cancers?
It can help prevent ovarian cancer, I believe, is the one that is most closely tied.
Okay.
So that's, but also breast cancer, lower incidence of breast cancer, the longer you breastfeed.
Gosh, that's good information to know.
Always, when I speak to, it's always on a population level. So, you know, just because you breastfeed for a long time doesn't necessarily mean that you won't get breast cancer, but
your risk
will be lower.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and how do you conduct that research? Does that mean interviewing people or how does that research happen?
There's a lot of big body of research around the benefits of breastfeeding, and I actually think the research is a lot stronger in terms of what the benefits are for the mother, because there's really some mixed results out there in what researchers have found for the benefits for the infants.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of studies have shown a lot of different benefits, and I think when we look at the body of research as a whole, we can say there are some really clear benefits, especially in terms of reduced ear infections, reduced acute illnesses early in the baby's life, and then reduced incidence of obesity over the baby's life course.
Really?
As the baby grows up. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
But there have been some studies that have found that those results maybe aren't as strong or maybe aren't as true as we thought they were. And part of the issue with that is it's very hard to measure what does breastfeeding mean? Does it mean any breastfeeding at all? Does it mean breastfeeding exclusively for 6 months, as is the recommendation? Does it mean breastfeeding, you know, what many mothers end up doing is combo mm-hmm. feeding, which is trying to breastfeed, but maybe you supplement with a little mm-hmm. formula here and there.
Sure.
So creating a common definition that researchers can use across this body of literature has been really tricky.
It's so
there.
Interesting because there's so many details you don't even think about. I never even mm-hmm. thought about the details that you just raised as far as what is the definition. I just never even thought about it.
Yeah.
Now, how about, have you done some projects, I think you've mentioned before, with food or communities, food and communities, and what would those be?
Mm-hmm. Well, relating to our local community, it's not so much a project, but I have worked to help maintain for a while the Tuolumne Farmers Market.
Oh, which is
for
huge.
A bit.
That's
and
so important.
Something that was really dear to my heart that we did when that market was in operation was I helped create a process for accepting EBT or, quote, food stamps or SNAP
right.
at the market so that people
right.
could actually come to that market with their EBT cards, swipe, and then use that to buy fresh produce.
Right.
So that is something that I would absolutely love to bring to the Sonora market, and
oh,
I think there's
yes.
been some up and
yes.
down in the interest for that, but I think the time is good to...
That would be
hopefully,
fabulous.
Yeah, it was really satisfying to be able to bring it to Tuolumne, and I would love to see, since Sonora is a much larger market. And
well,
and across all of our markets in all of our areas, I
mm-hmm.
know that work is going on right now for the local here in San Andreas market
right.
to
right.
accept EBT.
Right.
And hopefully that's also just the first step along the way to then what's called market match, or a match where people who use their EBT for the fresh produce
mm-hmm.
at the market actually then get additional funds to use. So it's like an incentive for people to buy more of this good, healthy
wonderful.
Food with their SNAP benefits.
Well, and it's probably important to know where your food comes from
mm-hmm.
and what are some of the reasons that you see with knowing that. Maybe the reduction of the use of pesticides or insecticides.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being able to talk to the farmers and
right.
find out how they're grown,
mm-hmm.
And having it local,
yep.
having it, I mean, whenever I've gone to a farmer's market, it's so fresh. I think they just pick it either
mm-hmm.
the day before or that morning sometimes, or they tell me when they pick it.
Yeah, you can talk to people and see. Well, and I think often in the Foothill communities, I've seen a lot that, and I should say, I don't think I mentioned earlier, I actually grew up in Sonora. I don't know
oh,
if I
no,
that,
you didn't mention that.
I did. I grew up in Sonora, and I'm very happy to have be back working here now and be able to
so you're
be at home.
Familiar with the nuances of
yes.
the Foothill communities.
Yes, more or less. I think I have a lot to learn about El Dorado still, but I'm looking forward to that. But,
oh,
yeah.
I'm sure
mm-hmm.
that's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to talk about any maybe future projects you're hoping to see?
Sure. Well, like I mentioned, that market match.
Right,
that
market
I would
match.
Love to move towards that with our farmers market and working
okay.
more towards that. But right now we have a lot going on in terms of what's called wellness policies and wellness councils in the school. So a lot of our educators across all the counties are working with or starting to work with our local schools, elementary schools that qualify. And by qualify, I mean that at least half of the students receive free or reduced price lunch. So these are schools
mm-hmm.
that are probably receiving these SNAP benefits in their families and in their communities. And so
right.
there are people we want to work with. But each school, all public schools across the country, under the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, which was Michelle Obama's sort of signature piece of legislation when she was in office, all schools need to have a wellness policy and to have implemented it by now. Not all schools, either
oh.
in our area or across the country, have
is
actually
right?
implemented this and
oh.
have these policies up and running, but they're a really great opportunity for the school to sit down as a whole and think, what's best for the health and wellness for our students? Because, again, we know from the research that a student's health does affect a student's learning outcomes and probably vice versa. But
that
you know, it's just kind of common sense to think if a student is hungry, if a student has not eaten well, or if a student is stressed, not knowing if they're going to be able to eat well, then clearly that's going to impact their performance. So nutrition has been a really big part of these wellness policies, and we are working with the schools to support them as they develop policies that we hope can best support student health.
So it sounds wonderful. And Katie, I hate to say we ran out of time, but we're so excited to have you as far as the UCCE program and in the nutrition program. And we're excited to see all the wonderful things you're going to do in the future. And will you come back on again and
tell
us?
Sure, I will. I'll update when we have our nice Facebook page and our hopefully some communications going out.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. And today I'm actually at the UCCE office here in Sonora. And I'm going to be talking to a Tuolumne Master Gardener named Sharon Grout. And Sharon Grout actually used to be a park ranger over at Columbia. And she's got some interesting information about some of the roses that are at the Columbia Park. So, hello, Sharon.
Hi.
And how did you get interested in learning about these roses?
I've always loved roses.
Oh.
And I cannot successfully grow them around my house because I do not have a fenced yard.
Oh.
And I live in Columbia, and the Columbia deer herd is death on 4 feet to roses.
Oh, no.
So, but somehow the roses in Columbia managed to persevere. And a lady named Rosemary Sawyer and a gentleman named Fred Boutine very graciously helped me identify and label roses in Columbia.
Oh.
Some of them are old garden roses.
Okay.
And some of them are a little bit newer, as much into the 1940s maybe.
So that's
scattered
newer.
Around.
That would be a new rose?
Yeah.
1940?
Yeah, the one, it's 1940s. It's called High Noon. It's a yellow, beautiful yellow rose in front of one of the rental cottages that the City Hotel uses. And it's on, that one is on State Street.
Oh,
gorgeous, beautiful yellow. And if I remember correctly, it was grown by the florist industry as a florist rose because it's
really
just gorgeous.
Oh,
and this one
just
happens to be planted by, well, it used, the Rainey's built this building, and I assume it was Mary Rainey who planted it.
Okay. Now, since that's a newer rose, and that dates back to 1940, what are some of the older rose varieties? I mean, how old are they?
Some of them, the roses, the variety of roses date before 1870, but we may not know exactly when they were planted in Columbia.
Okay.
We just know the variety was pre-1870 or 1815 because there are books where if a rose can be identified, you can look up the history of the rose and find when it was developed, when it was found. And if you're really lucky, you can even find when it was first imported into the United States, usually the East Coast.
Oh my gosh.
But some roses came to California, and California also has 9 native roses.
Really?
There's a man named Daryl G. H. Schramm. For anyone who wants to get the book, it's S-C-H-R-A-M-M. It's called Rainbow, and it's a history of roses in California up to maybe 1900, maybe 1920.
Oh,
I don't remember.
Gosh.
I tried to find the book today, and couldn't find it. But it's fascinating.
So there's 9 roses that are native to California.
According to his book, yes. And
a lot of people
in Columbia, they'll see a rose. For instance, the rose that's behind the Wells Fargo building. And they'll go up and they'll look at it and they will think that, oh, this is a wild California wild rose.
Sure.
It's not. It's actually, it's a British rose. It's called Sweetbriar or Eglantine, and if you crush the leaves between your fingers, it smells like green apples. And that's how you tell it is not.
Oh, and that's the way you're able to discriminate.
It's the only way I know.
I've got to try it.
for rose experts, you know, they can look at the prickles or even the hips and the rose itself.
Now, I've learned, I don't know a lot about roses, but I've learned that prickles actually refer to what I used to call thorns,
mm-hmm.
but they're actually called prickles.
And I don't understand that.
I know, but I mean, most people call them thorns, but actually, if you're going to be talking to a rosarian, you should probably use the verbiage and use the word prickles.
I have to admit that when I was doing a lot of reading on roses and I came across prickles, I thought they were talking about those little sharp things around the edges of the leaves.
Yeah.
And then they were describing them, and I thought, I've never seen any leaves that look like that. And then it was like, oh, they mean thorns. Oh, okay.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's all learning, so.
Right, right. So one of the things that I've been taught, actually, is the way they name roses, it's so interesting. If you can't identify it, what is that process?
There isn't a process.
There isn't a process.
I wish there was. I wish, for instance, something called, what was its name? Something Peruviana. And I was talking to Fred Boutin about this. And in this case, whatever the plant was, he said, oh, that's because it came in on the ship Peru.
Oh.
And I said, oh, does that mean everything called Peruviana came in on, was imported on the ship? And he looked at me and started laughing and said, I wish that were true. It's like, oh, that would make it too easy. But there is a history behind some of the names. In fact, I just acquired a book at the
Statewide Master Gardener Conference.
Exactly, about women in the garden, referring to roses named after women.
Oh, fascinating.
Oh, yeah. So I'm finally starting to read about that one. But there's a rose called General Allard that is at the northwest corner of the Brainerd House, which is in Columbia.
Okay.
At the corner of Broadway and Parrott's Ferry Road, more or less. And it's called General Allard, and he was a general, French general, who lived on the Ile de Bourbon in the Indian Ocean.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so there's a whole history behind some of these roses.
The stories are fascinating.
Yeah.
They really are,
yeah.
The story behind the roses. And they get just kind of curious, with all the roses that we have the different roses that we even have in Sonora and Columbia, the ones that are not native to California, how did they get here?
There's a story, and you'll hear people talk about it, saying, oh, they were brought across in covered wagons. You know, people wanted, you know, brought cuttings with them. And I'm sure that happened. The only actual proof that I have found was in a book. It was in an article printed in 1884, or maybe 1886, by a man named Charles Shen, who really delved into Gold Rush history, early California history. And he mentioned talking to a lady in Weaverville who actually brought roses overland from New York.
Oh, really?
But the nursing industry started here very shortly after the Gold Rush.
You mean there were nurseries that actually grew?
They imported, and then they started
roses
growing. By 1852, there were nurseries in San Francisco specific to roses.
Oh my gosh.
And there's a man named Colonel Warren who got to California in 1853, settled in Sacramento with his nursery stock, and started growing roses there.
So this is, just even the nurseries that grew the roses, I mean, there's a lot of history even with that. I had no idea.
Oh, and it's fascinating reading. Warren, his nursery was where Sacramento State College is now, and he published, as far as I know, the first nursery catalog that was published in California. He did.
Really?
There were nurseries in San Jose, all over the place. By 1854,
mm-hmm.
he had 12,000 roses, 83 varieties.
Oh my gosh.
So, and he imported water from the Sacramento River. Because
okay.
the river, I have to think, American River, mm-hmm. goes right by his area.
Okay.
And he had a steam engine that would
right.
pump water out, and that's what he used.
That is so fascinating. But why do you think roses were so popular even back then? I mean, I know roses are still popular today, but why do you think they were popular then?
Regardless of their reputation, roses are a tough, durable flower. If you drive around the foothills today, you'll see rose bushes in the middle of the fields. No one's pruning
That's
those.
That's true.
No one's fertilizing them. No one's watering them. And there they are.
And
or you'll see them along a fence line.
Oh my goodness.
And no one's taken care of them. These are old roses that work so well here, and there are roses that are very drought tolerant, obviously, or they wouldn't still be living in the middle of the fields.
That's true. That's true.
As long
true.
As there aren't any deer around them.
I know. That's true. That and the deer. but that's interesting, because I kind of always thought you had to fertilize roses, you had to give them lots of water, you had to, and but maybe I'm only thinking of the hybrid tea roses, possibly?
Modern roses need more care.
Okay.
A little more care. But even during the drought, a rose would survive. It might not thrive. You might not get millions of blooms, but they would survive on 2 gallons of water a week.
Oh my gosh. I'm a convert. I'm totally a convert. 2 gallons of water a week.
As I said,
that's nothing.
They aren't going to be lush. They aren't going
right.
to be award-winning.
Sure.
But they'll survive through drought. And once again, referring to the ones out in the middle of the field.
Right. And they would actually be called heritage roses or heirloom roses?
There's a classification called old garden roses.
Okay.
And I can't remember the date.
Okay.
So I think it might be 1860 or 65, but
well, and then you know, people did take cuttings of roses too. If
oh,
they were
yes, they
visiting
did.
A friend, and this friend had this amazing rose,
right? And then that's part of growing roses, is sharing your roses with them. Because if
right.
you find, going back to Fred Boutin again, he found old roses and takes cuttings to continue the stock, because they're so, and so does
Rosemary Sawyer,
no,
and then Bevier Pennington, right?
Yes.
And she's a master gardener in Calaveras County.
And
yes.
she's the one, and the book that she created, she
right.
and
I think Judy Dean.
Yes.
And then Fred Boutin.
Yeah.
And it was actually
that's such a wonderful book.
It is, and I think we've got a copy. I can't see right now, but I know we had a copy here in the library. Here at the office, but that book, I believe, is used to help identify roses.
Exactly, and there are some roses that nobody knows what they are.
That's true.
But there are areas that, locations where groups will grow them, such as the old city cemetery in Sacramento.
Oh, I still have to make it there.
They have a wonderful, and some of them are, they have a wonderful collection. And some of them are called by the location in which they were found.
That's true.
There was one called the San Andreas Car Wash Rose.
That's true. That's true.
Because it was found in the San Andreas Car Wash.
Right, and it does grow. It still is growing at the Demonstration Garden in San Andreas.
But it's not at the car wash anymore.
It's no longer at the car
so
wash.
So if someone had not taken that cutting,
right.
that rose would not be around now.
That's true.
And
that's,
it still hasn't been identified.
No. So, and I guess wherever it was found, I guess that's, you call it by the location.
Until it's identified.
Would you come back again and we can continue this discussion Certainly. About roses?
Certainly.
Okay, thank you so much. And we'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.